From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, world powers and Iran make a final push at the nuclear talks deadline. North Korea threatens retaliation over the UN human rights resolution. And Los Angeles area high school students use physics and creativity to build a whimsical machine.
I'm kind of nervous and excited because we're not done yet, but we're getting there and we're almost done.
It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. The foreign ministers of Iran and a group of six world powers have reached the final day of their self-imposed year-long period to agree on a comprehensive deal to ensure Iran's nuclear program is peaceful. Officials from both sides said Sunday they are considering the idea of extending the talks in Vienna beyond Monday, just as they did in July when their original six-month deadline came to an end with no deal. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met today with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi to discuss the status of the negotiations and said he would be holding other meetings later. Meanwhile, U.S. President Barack Obama says extending nuclear talks aimed at the comprehensive agreement with Iran will depend on what emerges from the latest Vienna talks. VOA's Victor Beatty reports Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, appearing Sunday on the same U.S. television broadcast, warned against making a historic mistake by reaching a bad deal with Tehran.
President Obama, who acknowledges the gaps between the Iranian and the P5 plus one negotiating positions are still significant, was asked if the negotiations will be extended beyond midnight Monday.
You know, I think what we're going to do is take a look at what emerges over the course of the weekend.
Mr. Obama was asked if he is confident that an agreement to contain Iran's nuclear program will gain support in the U.S. Congress.
I'm confident that if we reach a deal that is verifiable and assures that Iran does not have breakout capacity, that not only can I persuade Congress, but I can persuade the American people that it's the right thing to do.
Mr. Obama says the good news is that the interim nuclear agreement reached a year ago with Tehran is working by stopping Iran's nuclear program from advancing. As for improved relations with Iran, Mr. Obama says Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism and its attitude toward nations like Israel remain serious obstacles. A nuclear agreement would, in his words, take a big piece of business off the table.
And perhaps begin a long process in which the relationship, not just between Iran and us, but the relationship between Iran and the world and the region begins to change. You know, Iran's not like North Korea, a country that's just completely isolated and completely dysfunctional. So they have the opportunity, I think, to really thrive. I suspect President Rouhani would like to seize that opportunity, but in the end, he's going to have to deal with his politics at home, and he's not the ultimate decider inside of Iran. The supreme leader is.
Appearing on the same program, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu cautioned against reaching a bad deal with Iran.
A bad deal would enable Iran to remain with thousands of centrifuges, which it could use to enrich uranium, which is what you need for a nuclear bomb. It could do so in a very short time. I think the key principle is this. Don't dismantle sanctions before you dismantle Iran's capacity to make a nuclear bomb. And as I understand it, the Iranians are nowhere near to accepting that. And if, for any reason, the United States and the other powers agree to leave Iran with that capacity to break out, I think that would be a historic mistake, not only because it endangers my country, Israel, that Iran's ruler, the Ayatollah Khamenei, vows to annihilate, but also because I think it would endanger the entire Middle East and the world.
Mr. Netanyahu says Iran has used the interim agreement to develop other aspects of its nuclear program, noting the UN Atomic Agency, the International Atomic Energy Agency, says Tehran refuses to divulge elements of its secret military nuclear program. He urges international negotiators to maintain and even tighten the sanctions until Iran makes the concessions necessary to keep it from developing nuclear weapons. Middle East analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco says an extension of the nuclear talks now appears inevitable.
This is primarily because both sides have put an enormous amount of work since the interim agreement last year, and it would be bad news for all concerned if they just collapsed.
However, he acknowledges some distance separates the negotiating positions of each side.
Iran wants sanctions lifted immediately, while Western states want to stagger, you know, their removal over a period of time to ensure that the Iranian government abides by its commitments. Other issues may involve the scope of uranium enrichment and, you know, just how much can be developed at what concentration. So these are still pretty fundamental issues to work on. It's still going to be a tough road to hoe by both sides.
Zunas says the international negotiators, including Iranian allies Russia and China, have remained surprisingly unified in their opposition to Iran obtaining nuclear weapons. That, he says, makes Tehran realize the opposition to its program is not just ideological, but international. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
A suicide bomber Sunday struck a volleyball match in southeastern Afghanistan, killing at least 50 people and wounding more than 80 others. The bloodshed near the border with Pakistan came as the Afghan parliament gave its approval to security pacts with the United States and NATO to allow them to maintain a smaller military mission in Afghanistan past 2014. Ayaz Ghul has details from Islamabad.
Authorities in the Afghan province of Paktika, where Sunday's bombing occurred, say most of the victims are civilians, including children. Speaking by phone, a provincial spokesman, Mukhlis Afghan, described the incident to VOA. He says residents from nearby district had gathered in Yahya Khel to watch a volleyball match when a man with explosives strapped to his body walked into the crowd and detonated the bomb. The spokesman says the powerful explosion instantly caused most of the deaths, and those seriously wounded were being flown to hospitals in the provincial capital. Paktika is one of the Afghan border regions in the east where insurgents of the Haqqani network have an active presence. The Al-Qaeda-linked militant group is fighting U.S.-led allied forces alongside the Taliban. The Afghan province was the site of a massive car bomb in July that ripped through a crowded market, killing dozens of people. Insurgent attacks on Afghan security forces and other installations have spiked in the country as NATO prepares to end its combat mission and withdraw most forces from Afghanistan. Sunday's bloodshed came hours after the lower house of the Afghan parliament approved security agreements with the United States and NATO. President Ashraf Ghani signed the two agreements immediately after assuming office in late September. Under the pacts, about 12,000 international forces will remain in Afghanistan starting next year to train and support Afghan security forces in their fight against the Taliban and its allied insurgent groups. The parliamentary approval came as U.S. President Barack Obama reportedly has authorized American troops to engage in combat missions and provide air support to Afghan forces when needed. Across the border, Pakistan's army has been conducting counter-militancy operations since June and says it has eliminated militant sanctuaries from most parts of North Waziristan, which borders Paktika province. The offensive is said to have driven many fighters across the border into Afghanistan. Pakistan condemned Sunday's suicide bombing in Paktika. A foreign ministry statement said that no cause justifies such acts of terrorism and taking of innocent lives. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. North Korea has issued a strongly worded statement warning of catastrophic consequences for the United States and other countries that supported the recent UN resolution condemning North Korea's human rights record. VOA's Brian Padden reports from Seoul that North Korea's threat to retaliate could signal that it intends to soon conduct a new nuclear test.
The rare official announcement released by North Korea's National Defense Commission reads more like a tirade. It refers to U.S. allies like South Korea as riffraffs, a term that means worthless. It calls North Korean defectors human rubbish, and it says the United States and its follower forces meaning South Korea and Japan, will be unable to escape the heavy blow of merciless punishment. The threats come in response to a recent United Nations committee vote calling on the Security Council to refer North Korea to the International Criminal Court for alleged human rights violations. The Kim Jong-un regime is accused of operating a network of political prisons holding more than 100,000 people and atrocities that include murder, torture, rape, and forced abortions. Kim Young-hyun, a professor of North Korean studies at Dongguk University, says he is not surprised that Pyongyang is reacting with strong language, but not, at least so far, military action. He says he expected that North Korea would express resistance against the international community, including the United States and South Korea, by using rhetoric rather than military action. The North Korean statement denies and rejects the human rights resolution. It describes the UN as the height of shameless burlesque, and it says the resolution is an attack on the country's sovereignty and a declaration of war. The statement refers to the possibility of nuclear conflict, leading some to believe that North Korea is planning another atomic test. In violation of the United Nations Security Council resolutions, Pyongyang has staged a number of nuclear tests and short ballistic missile launches and has launched a small satellite into space. South Korean Unification Ministry spokesman Lim Byung-chul cautioned Pyongyang against conducting new nuclear tests. He says as North Korea comes up with a measure such as a nuclear threat which worsens the situation against the international community, it will exacerbate its isolation. If North Korea provokes, it will face firm responses from the international community. Professor Kim Young-hyun says Pyongyang knows that conducting a nuclear test will kill any prospect for restarting international talks to end economic sanctions and increase aid in exchange for ending its nuclear program. He says if North Korea conducts a nuclear test, it means that North Korea uses its card, so it must be very careful before making a decision. It remains unclear if the UN Security Council will refer the North to the International Criminal Court since Pyongyang's allies, China and Russia, could veto the move. But with the latest North Korean statement, it appears the likelihood of resuming the six-party nuclear talks is remote, some 6 years after the last round in 2008. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
Here in the United States, tension is high in Ferguson, Missouri, as a grand jury weighs whether to indict a white police officer in the August killing of a black teenager. While a majority of local protesters in Ferguson have been training for nonviolent protests, some members of far-right and far-left groups are stirring things up, mostly on social media and the web. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports.
Images on news media of protesters and police clashing, as well as interactions on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media, make it look like protesters in Ferguson are clashing daily with law enforcement. In reality, demonstrations in this area have been mostly peaceful since the shooting sparked violent protests in August. Some local protesters have been attending classes in nonviolent action, and leaders have asked their groups to call out any demonstrators they see causing trouble. Some groups, however, like RBG Black Rebels, are inflaming matters. This self-described urban militia has offered a reward on Twitter for the location of Darren Wilson, the white police officer who shot unarmed black teenager Michael Brown. At the other end of the spectrum, the white supremacist group the Ku Klux Klan has been distributing flyers warning protesters that they have awakened a sleeping giant. Some conservative websites have published stories claiming that some protest groups have issued a list of so-called targets. One of the Facebook pages named for publishing the list was Justice for Mike Brown. Dirk Brown, who administers the page, told VOA he never posted it.
I saw the list, but everything they're saying on the list about what I said on the page, I never mentioned it on my page not one time.
Social media content and violent images in the news from August have put the community on edge, so much so that the governor of Missouri has declared a state of emergency.
Well, we're certainly concerned about folks that are not coming to speak, but instead are coming to instigate or cause harm to their fellow citizen or to the property.
Some business owners in Ferguson are boarding up their storefront, which might be considered another sign of nervousness about what is to come. Business owners tell VOA that they're not doing it because they feel threatened, but because their insurance companies have insisted on it. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Ferguson.
High school and college students throughout Los Angeles have been preparing for a machine building competition that challenges their science and creativity skills as well as their patience. It's the regional Rube Goldberg Machine Contest. The machines have to have a series of chain reactions to complete a simple task. The task of building a machine is anything but simple, as reporter Elizabeth Lee found out at one high school in the Venice neighborhood.
At the end of a school day, a physics classroom at Animo Venice Charter High School is transformed into a workshop. For the last 2 months, six students, with the help of their physics teacher, Christina Hanush, have been trying to build a machine that erases a chalkboard.
That's a simple task, and they have to come up with a whole crazy machine that has as many chain reactions as possible to, in the end, erase that chalkboard.
It's called a Rube Goldberg machine, named after the American Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist and inventor who specialized in drawing complex machines that performed simple tasks. In less than a week, the students will be entering their machine in a citywide competition in the regional Rube Goldberg Machine Contest. 14-year-old Kelly McNamee is one of the team members.
I'm kind of nervous and excited because we're not done yet, but we're getting there and we're almost done.
But even getting to this point has not been easy, says Melissa Garcia.
The most challenging part is trying to not get frustrated.
Anush says getting all the chain reactions to work is anything but simple.
They need to be persistent because we've probably run this 50 times and it's only worked twice.
It's hard not to blame other people or ourselves, and we sort of have to keep working together and find a solution.
Melissa Garcia and her teammates find solutions in physics and everyday objects such as marbles, a toilet seat, and a toy train. The objects came from students' homes and their neighborhood streets. Hanush says the goal is not just a complex machine that works, but one that is also creative.
Just combining all of their knowledge that they have about everything in life and then working as a team and putting it together, I think is just an incredibly valuable experience.
Melissa Garcia says she didn't know what to expect when they first started.
I think we're all impressed and amazed by what we created.
In just a few days, these students will find out if their machine will impress and amaze the judges on competition day. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Oh, mousetrap. Again.
It's always a mousetrap.
Well, good luck to them. It sounds like they're having fun doing it. A Swiss museum says it will accept a priceless collection of long-hidden artwork from a German recluse whose trove included masterpieces looted from their Jewish owners by the Nazis. Christoph Schoblin of the Bern Art Museum said today in Berlin the museum would accept the collection but would work to ensure that any art taken from Jewish owners by the Nazis is returned. German authorities in 2012 seized more than 1,200 items from Cornelius Gerlitt's apartment in Munich while investigating a tax case. Gerlitt, who died in May at the age of 81, was the son of an art dealer tasked by Adolf Hitler to help plunder great works from museums and Jewish collectors. Many of the Jewish collectors died in the Nazi gas chambers. The collection includes paintings and sketches by Picasso, Monet, Chagall, and other masters. Gerlitt was not charged with a crime, but Germany confiscated all the items. The French news agency says Gerlitt was angry about the treatment he received from Germany, leading him to stipulate in his will that the collection should not go to a German museum, but instead to the Swiss museum. Well, thanks very much for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
This is Today in History. On this date in 1859, English naturalist Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species. In it, Darwin postulated that living organisms evolved over time through the process of natural selection. In 1922, 9 Irish Republican Army members were executed by an Irish Free State firing squad. Among them was author Robert Erskine Childers, who had been arrested for illegally carrying a revolver. Also in 1922, the Italian Parliament gave Benito Mussolini dictatorial powers for 1 year. The fascist Mussolini went on to rule Italy until his overthrow during World War II. In 1963, Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President John F. Kennedy, was shot and killed on live television at the Dallas, Texas police headquarters. In 1965, Lieutenant General Mobutu Sese Seko seized power in the Belgian Congo in a bloodless coup. He was ousted in 1996 by the forces of rebel leader Laurent Kabila. In 1971, a hijacker calling himself Dan Cooper, known as D.B. Cooper, parachuted out of a passenger plane over Washington State with $200,000 in ransom money. He was never found. In 2012...
Open Gangnam Style! Gangnam Style!
Gangnam Style became the most popular YouTube video of its time, with views measured in the billions. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The West African nation of Burkina Faso is taking the first steps toward returning to democratic rule with the naming of an interim president. Former Foreign Minister Michel Kafando has been sworn into the post following his selection November 17th by a special panel composed of political, military, religious, civil, and traditional leaders. That followed adoption of a charter that maps out a year-long transition to elections and creation of an interim legislative chamber. The interim government takes power from the nation's military, which took command after public protests forced President Blaise Compaoré to step down and leave the country last month. Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida declared himself head of state, but facing renewed protests, he has pledged to step aside for civilian authority. The United States welcomes the Charter for Transitional Government in Burkina Faso, developed by political parties, civil society, and religious and traditional leaders. We urge continued progress in the discussions between these groups and the military so that this crisis may come to a quick end and the process of rebuilding Burkina Faso's democracy may begin. We also underscore the urgency of Burkina Faso returning to constitutional rule. Now that civil society, political parties, and the Constitutional Court are fully engaged in elaborating the mechanics of the country's transition, we urge the men and women of Burkina Faso's armed forces to return to their primary mission, safeguarding the territorial integrity of Burkina Faso and the security of its citizens. At the same time, we firmly hope that the central mission of the transitional government will be to ensure effective preparation for national elections.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.